The first item up will be service animals, House Bill 170. Representative Bryce is here to present the bill. Representative Bryce, you have the attention of the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and members of the Judiciary Committee, I appreciate you hearing House Bill 170. The need for House Bill 70 actually was brought to my attention by some folks who've been trying to get their service animal, or trying to train service animals. When they would go on the ferries, well, the Marine Highway System said, nope, you guys can't bring your dogs out of the kennel, and you can only spend 30 minutes with them in between stops to make sure they're watered, this, that, or whatever. Other instances of problems where the people trying to train service animals occur are in the court system and many other state buildings. The ADA affords somebody with a disability the right to enter a public facility with a service animal and cannot be barred access to that facility based upon that animal. Now, the person is responsible for the actions of that animal that they take in. So, in other words, if they take a dog that is a service animal, and the dog bites somebody, the owner is responsible for that. Or the owner may be asked to leave if that animal is unruly or some other thing. The issue that 170 is trying to address is, well, if ADA affords this right to somebody with disabilities who has a service animal, it seems as if it would be only appropriate that if these animals are being trained, that to find out to ensure that the temperament of the animal is appropriate, whatever, that they have access to public facilities as well. And that's very simply what House Bill 170 does. My understanding is that the judiciary CS does a couple of different things, and I'll let the chair speak to them. But it enters into the realm of certification of service animals, and I think that's a very important aspect to address. I was trying to stay away from it because, frankly, it can be a little bit scary when you start to discuss that, but I think the way that we've got it, that the chair has addressed it in here, is perfectly acceptable. And another change was in the identification, ensuring that the animal could be identified as a service animal. In the past, it was a positive defense for somebody who ousted somebody with a service animal from their facility to say, look, no way to identify this animal. Well, that was clarified in here as well. Both of those changes, I think, are fairly appropriate. And, I don't think that there's been any major problems talking with the people who brought it about. So I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Bryce? Yes, Senator Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bryce, how did you feel about the Senate House Committee and their committee substitutes scaling back to only public buildings? Some of the people I remember testifying were in support of your legislation very enthusiastically said that half a loaf's better than no loaf. I'd have to say, you know, the Hess Committee made a mistake, in my opinion, and gave us just the heel of the loaf of bread. Would you encourage the committee to restore the bill back to its original form, or what are your thoughts about that?
Senator Ellis, Mr. Chair, some of the issues that had been brought to my attention did revolve around access to the Palmer Fair, the State Fair, and when a service animal might not be allowed there, and well, actually, and in the past, quite a few animals in training had been kicked out of that out of the Palmer Fair, kicked out of the downtown, or Fifth Avenue Mall in Anchorage. It's private facilities. I think that there is a need, definitely, to allow access to someplace like the mall or the fair that does create an environment that is not necessarily the same as you're going to find in a state building. But I would leave it up to the will of the committee as to whether or not you feel that it's appropriate to expand that back out or not.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be so inclined, but I'm not going to press it if it it hurts the bill's chances, so I'll defer to you all, but I think...
Could you point out, Senator Ellis, where that is? Because it looks to me as though it says that they have the right to go into any place to which the general public is invited. Where is that?
Well, maybe the House committee messed up, but they intended to...
I think you're correct. I just haven't found it yet.
I think it's under, page 3, line 17, with the definition of public facility. It means a capital improvement owned, operated, or occupied by, or mode of transportation owned or operated by the state, the public corporation, and the state university of Alaska.
Oh, I see. They narrowly construed what...
But that
doesn't define an area to which the public is invited. It says, or other place, on page 2, line 3, or other place to which the general public is invited.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yeah, and then it says except as in B, and all B talks about is... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, what we're talking about in Section 1 is basically the interference with the rights of the physically or mentally challenged person. And that's dealing with a certified service animal specifically. In other words, after the animal has been trained and has passed the test, and everything else. I believe.
I see what you're saying. Certified service animal.
Yeah.
So in other words, yes, you can go into, and of course that's just compliance with the ADA.
That's correct, Mr.
Chair. They're complying with the ADA in that paragraph, but then they're limiting it to public facility only when it comes to
training
purposes.
Yes.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd encourage the committee to think about, I wouldn't want to propose an amendment anyway that's going to hurt the bill, but if there were interest, I probably wouldn't propose an amendment that would say that every private business has to let people, even though I would favor that, it wouldn't might not be found with favor to require every single business to open their doors willingly at any time for training of service animals. But maybe there's some middle ground about malls that are could be considered public accommodations, or the state fair, or other places that where it's not a single small business owner who might be disrupted by the activity, but larger places where I think most of us would agree it wouldn't be disruptive and would be a reasonable thing to allow service animals to be trained in those settings, because that's what the disabled people have to deal with if they go out in public. So
I didn't hear the testimony that occurred in the House committee.
I didn't either. All the testimony was in favor of leaving the bill the way it was, but when they were told the bill wasn't going anywhere otherwise, they just said, well, a little bit's better than nothing. And
what happened at the Palmer Fair that caused the problem? Did they try to bring in 10 dogs all at once? Or
all I've heard is anecdotal evidence along those lines that not necessarily 10 dogs, but somebody's taken a dog in, and Palmer people, or the fair people, say, no, thank you. You can't do that here. The dog's disruptive, this, that, or whatever. And whether or not, Mr. Chair, that's what caused the resultant change in the HESS, I'm not very clear on. I was actually out of the room on the floor when they adopted and passed the CS. But my understanding was that there were some concerns that folks didn't want to place this so-called burden on private industry.
Yeah, I guess I don't
I don't have any problem, I guess, with some restrictions in my private industry, but I never thought of the Palmer Fair as being a private industry. You know?
Well, it's not necessarily.
But if there's people
it's
that have
private
concerns,
nonprofit. Yeah.
I appreciate the discussion of the issue, and I'd like to hear more about that.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have any objection to those provisions that we've inserted in the CS? Maybe just before we move forward with the rest of the testimony, we might adopt it.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the judiciary version, the Waterback R version for the working draft.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the CS has been adopted. Thank you very much, Mr. Price. Is there anyone else? Okay, no further questions. Online from Kenai, we have Mrs. Ruby Schmidtauber. Did I say that right, by the way, ma'am?
Yes, you did, sir. Mr. Taylor, Chair, this is Ruby Schmidtauber in Neilchik. I'm from Neilchik. I'm in Kenai. We were listening to you nice guys there in Juneau. We do hope that you please put H. Bill 170 back to its original version, as I have raised Yukon a CNI dog, and unless we can take him into businesses of all kinds, it's very, very hard to train the dogs. And he is well trained, but he has a physical defect that he was given back to me. It takes a lot of puppies raised and trained to get just a few good CNI dogs, and they have to be perfect dogs. You have a lot of letters before you and pictures that has been sent in. There is 8 or 10 CNI puppies on the Kenai Peninsula that are being raised at this time. And we do hope that you put back, you know, 170 the way it was original wrote. Please do. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, Ruby. Mrs. Linda, or Ms. Linda Athens, I think it is.
Yes, Linda Athens.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to inform you a little bit about the history prior to all this reaching Representative Bryce. What we try to do every year is have a fun day for the guide dogs in training. And what that is putting them through a course of distractions and surfaces and different things they would encounter as a certified animal. And in 1995, at our fun day at the Palmer Fair, which is where we had it that year, I requested a letter that raisers could carry with them because I knew there would be a big hassle at the gate for them to get in. They said there would be no need for that, but indeed, every raiser was hassled trying to even get to their event. And from there, the youth raisers, and I want you to understand, this is part of my frustration with the changes, that this legislation was originated with teenagers. This was their interest in trying to make a change that would benefit themselves and future raisers. And I think that part of has been lost in the history, because the Fair Board told us that they would not accommodate us unless there was legislative change. At that point, the youth got really excited because they thought they could make a difference. And they went to work, and the Governor's Council on Independent Living took us under their wing to help us through this process. And I just want you to understand that part of the history and how disappointed the kids are now to learn that Palmer Fair is private nonprofit. And so their original intent, they can't even look at it as a possibility now.
Yeah, Linda, how many young people went up to Palmer that day?
That time, there were 6 raisers from across the state, and we do have, well, of course, now we have Ruby, who's a senior citizen, but at the time we had 6 teen raisers.
Okay, and you were putting on an event there in the fair?
Yes. It was in the tent where they have the usual dog show, the 4-H dog show. They were having the dog show the next day, so we got to use the tent the day before.
Yeah. And I assume that either because of, there must have been some reason, I mean, gosh, they bring all kinds of animals in and out of that fairgrounds. What, was there any problem or anything that occurred there that you noticed or that would cause them to say they weren't going to do that in the future?
What I was told is that there was a history before, not with guide dogs in training, but I guess different people's dogs used to be allowed on the fairgrounds. You know, there wasn't a no-pet policy. And so they kind of got burned with just dogs running around the fairgrounds, and so they just put this rule that there is no dogs. And we even had an instance where a person wanted to go in and get their horse, but they had their guide dog in training in the truck, and they wouldn't let them in with this guide dog in training, even in the truck. So one person had to stand outside the fairgrounds with this dog while the other person went in and got the horse in a trailer. So it's even that, you know, it's their no pet policy when our dogs are not pets. They're service animals in training. And we're very careful. Even before any fair, I send out information about how to be cautious and very safe around other people's animals.
Yeah, well, we were providing for some level in the CS, which you probably don't have in front of you yet, but should be faxed to you. In the CS, committee substitute for this bill, we had provided for identification both of the person and on the animal, and then some certification of the person doing the training. Do you have a problem with that?
Well, we all carry identification cards that identify us as a raiser, as well as the dog, according to breed, sex, and name. Is that enough identification?
Well, what we were thinking of was that you've got a card in your pocket or your purse, and you go to come through the gate of some facility or some, whether it's the state ferry or whoever it is, I guess. And the first thing the person looking at you thinks is it's just another person coming on board with a dog. And they have very strict policies about what's going to happen with dogs and cats on board the ferries and in other buildings and things. And I was looking for something that would actually identify the dog himself. I mean, a little piece of cloth that went across his shoulders that said, "Hi, I am a dog in training for this purpose." Would eliminate, I would think, a whole bunch of problems for people.
Well, that's absolutely true, and our dogs are required to wear their jacket in public. And it says, you know, guide dogs of the desert, puppy in training.
Well, all I was referring to was that hopefully that would be the case in all instances if we put it into the law, and that there would be some certification level available for those people who would be doing the training. And I didn't know whether that would restrict young people or not. It wasn't my intention to restrict them. I just felt they could take a test or go through a course or whatever, whether it's the 4-H that puts it on or whoever, and that certifies them as a person that knows how to train a dog.
Well, currently the bill is reading authorized is serving as a volunteer with a school agency or other facility, and we do instruct our raisers, whether they're 15 or 50, with how to raise a guide dog, and they also have advancement levels of when they are ready, you know, to go into a restaurant or to a grocery store. So there are certain criteria they have to meet before they can do each one of those types of activities.
Well, yeah, I understood that. What I was doing was providing with the certification, and you don't have that one in front of you. That's why I was referring to the committee substitute. I added a new section, Article 5, which would provide, through the Department of Health and Social Services, a form of identification and a form of certification so that, there would be some standard out there for the type of knowledge, background, and expertise that people had, at least a base minimum, for training dogs, and that would be, they would be the ones. Right now, you don't have anything, you don't have any uniform body that issues identification. And
well, but we do, the school that we work through.
Yeah, I understand that, but I'm looking for something that would be uniform in nature and would be, would have the seal, good housekeeping seal of approval from the state of Alaska, so to speak, on it. It isn't something that would be typed up on some letterhead that says the California School of Dog Training and in some form of letter or card issued by somebody that these folks have never heard of. I just wanted you to have something that's very clear, very easily to understand, and that there'd be no question about who the individual was that was with the animal in training, and that whoever the merchant or owner of the facility was, he could know right away that this is the person, this is the dog, and they are training, and they're certified to do so. Yeah, Senator Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And following up on that discussion, I know that Senator Ellis is concerned about, you know, the change in HESS. And I know, as a business owner, would be much more comfortable in allowing the animals in that are in training into my place of business if there is a standard certification for this whole training mechanism, because as it is right now, you know, although there's a lot of good training organizations out there, we don't know who they are or where they've come from, or maybe just, you know, many years ago you could send $5 and become a minister too. You know, so I think if the state has a program out there and set some standard, I, as a business owner, would be much more comfortable in letting these animals in training into my place of business because I know that there's a standard that's been set.
This is Linda Athens. Could I make a comment?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. Since I coordinate the program for the state for 4-H, this is a program that is run through the 4-H program, and we have very strict criteria that we screen every family that raises. We do home visits. We check on, you know, their ability levels, their experience, and we just have this really long checklist of things that we ask the raisers. And so they also, you know, they are required to wear those jackets, plus with the ID card. If I walk in with a husky and my ID card says that I'm raising a black lab, that clearly says that I'm not trying to say that it's a lot of work for these people to take dogs into places. And believe me, I've heard conversation about, well, anybody could just take their dog in, and I know how much work it's been because I've raised a guide dog, and it's a lot of work to just take your dog into the grocery store or into the restaurant, and I just think to myself, who would just want to do this?
Well, unfortunately, Linda, there are a lot of people who do. I have personally encountered two or three different situations where people with big old dogs that are kind of living a more rustic lifestyle, maybe sleeping in their car or something out in the summer there, especially in the southeast, they just waltz right into a grocery store with their dogs and think nothing of it, and somebody has to come and run them out of the place and say, go tie that dog up outside, and then there's a big argument, and the dog is then tied up outside to a parking meter or something, and then he barks and growls at everybody that comes by him. And it, in other words, there are some people out there that aren't very courteous about it and don't really care about it. And there's a whole bunch of them that are going to say, you know, they'll use any device they can to get what they want at the time they happen to want it, you know. I think your people end up getting caught kind of in that dilemma where there are some people out there that aren't very courteous about the way they they aren't very good, really, about the way they treat their animals either, you know, but...
Senator Taylor?
Yes.
This is Bill Cravensick. May I make a comment?
Yeah, you're up next anyhow. Bill, Linda, was that all from your end?
Well, basically, I really want you to understand the part about the jacket that the dog wears, because mm-hmm. it has our 4-H emblem on it, and our people know that they do not abuse that. And, in fact, I was in our Central Peninsula Mall a couple of weeks ago with a dog, and there was a person in there with a husky, and I turned around and left because that dog I didn't feel like was in training. My dog was in training. I left, and I thought that was real appropriate on their part because, you know, you're not supposed to have dogs that aren't certified animals or that are not in training.
Right.
So, but my dog was identified with a jacket with 4-H on it.
Yeah, and theirs was not, right?
That's right.
That's, I guess, what I'm getting at, is that oftentimes we have to draw these laws to take care of those scoff laws that are out there that just kind of want to do as they please, and it seems awfully tedious to do that, especially for people like yourself involved in a very worthy cause, to have to struggle through the concerns that are raised by people that aren't quite as courteous. Linda, thank you very much. Bill Craig from Sitka.
Hello.
Yes, go right ahead, Bill.
Sorry I didn't get back to you sooner. I've been sick. But one thing I would like to point out, I ran into on the ferry, to protect people like 4-H that are training these animals, provide some sort of provision for a violation of law, misdemeanor or something for trying to say, I'm working in 4-H and this is an animal I'm training, or this is my service animal. We had a couple hunters that had gotten on the ferry in Seattle were trying to say their labs were service animals. And one at one point tried to say that he was with 4-H and so on. We need to protect these organizations to some degree somehow. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bill. Glad to hear you're getting better. Did Helen also want to testify?
Yes. Hi. Several things. Number one, as you know, I used to have a service animal. I've had two black labs and one Irish setter. They've since died. And I have to look at getting another service animal. Now, when my dogs, when I had them, okay, they were certified. They had their ID. I had what I was supposed to have carrying with them to identify them. I was told quite a few times, well, you can't take them in the grocery store. You can't take them in the restaurant. Do you really have to take them downtown? Must you take them in the grocery store? Must you take them in the clothing store? Must you walk them on this particular street? Well, they can't keep their training up and the training goes down. Plus, I'm at risk, and the people around me are at risk. I don't have my service animal because I don't hear as well as I need to. If it's not just the animals under training, it's after they've been trained. They also need to be allowed in during the training to make them the best, as one person put it, perfect dog they can be. And after they're trained, the same thing. They cannot be trained properly if they're not allowed in each and every place, all over the place, because they run into all kinds of situations. All I want and need for myself and the people that I know with service animals is to be allowed, when they're in training and when they have been trained and certified, that they be allowed to go in any place. It doesn't matter where it's at. They get to go because we need them wherever we're at. It doesn't matter whether we're in a grocery store, on a street, in a clothing store, in a courthouse, in a restaurant, in a hospital. No matter where it's at, we need them with us to prevent us from that. I noticed you guys had here that they're not to be prevented from going any place, but it happens all over Sitka. And I had it happen in Anchorage. I had it happen in Fairbanks. I had it happen in Juneau. When I was in Seattle, same type of thing. We need to listen to what the ADA Act says, and this bill can help if it has the proper authority and power behind it, which means they need to be allowed to go every place, not just some places, but every place. Thank you very much, Senator Taylor.
Yeah, thank you, Helen.
Welcome.
I think that's everyone on the teleconference network.
Oh, no, Velma's here, too.
Pardon?
Velma Pizarro.
I wasn't really...
Did you want to say anything?
I wasn't really prepared to speak. You know, I haven't really met up with a lot of...
I think we have no one further to speak.
Okay, thank you. We'll now move back to Juneau. Senator Pierce, you're going to have to take off, aren't you? Thank you for coming in. I hope you get well. Who was up first on the sign-up list over there? I don't have it here in front of me.
There are no names on it.
I think I have one gentleman that would like to testify, right? Just come forward. There's a chair right in front of you, and there's a desk right there.
Okay.
Desk right in front of you. There you go. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to review the CS, but you have had a chance to overhear the discussion, and if there's any parts of it you want us to go through or give further clarification to you, I can do that very quickly.
I did receive the a fax yesterday from Robin Taylor's. That's you.
Yeah.
I did receive a fax from you, and I did review the bill, and I assume that was the committee
substitute.
That's the one.
I'm told by my clerk that there has been a change since yesterday, and that's part of the thing I was going through, was that there would be a certification program for service animals and trainers. And it begins right there. It's about 3-4 paragraphs long. If you want, I'd read it to you.
If you would, please.
Yeah, sure. It says, certification program for service animals and trainers. A, the department shall develop a program under which the department will issue to an individual a form of identification that indicates that, one, the individual may train service animals. Two, an animal specified by the individual is a certified service animal. Or three, an animal certified by the individual is certified as being in training to be a service animal. B, the department may by regulation establish minimum standards that must be met by an applicant before identification is issued under this section. The standards may provide that an individual or animal that is certified by another entity, like the 4-H or some other training group, by another entity approved by the department is entitled to the identification issued by the department. And let's see, C, the identification issued under this section for an animal must be in a form that can be exhibited on the animal so that people would be able to look at the dog and see that he was wearing a little jacket or something. D, the department may charge an application fee under this section and a fee for each identification issued under this section. Total fees charged under this section in a fiscal year may not exceed the cost to the department of administering this section during the fiscal year. And then a definition in this section, quote, service animal, unquote, means an animal trained to assist a physically or mentally disabled person as defined by Alaska Statute 1880-300. I don't think that was in the one you had seen.
No.
Yesterday.
It was not.
But that's what I was talking about on certification. And when it referred to the words the department, it was referring to the Department of Health and Social Services. And basically they would come up with a regulation that says you need to have like Linda was talking about the 4-H program. Maybe it'll be tailored off of it, and it'll say you need to at least meet the following standards, and if you've met them good enough for 4-H, you've met them good enough for us, here's your state license to do this as a certified person, which you can show anybody, and here's a little jacket thing you put on the dog, you know, so that human beings will just automatically know that that's what the dog's there. By the way, I need to get your name for the secretary. I meant to ask you that.
My name is Dr. Lee Hagmeyer, and I am from Juneau. I've used a seeing eye dog for a total of, I guess, 23 years now, and my current dog is Wizard, and I've had him a little over 11 years, and will be retiring in this November. And my first dog I worked for 12 and a half years through all my campus activity. We started our first class and graduated through all our degrees. Mm-hmm. And we worked in a variety of situations between Wizard and I and my first dog, Pavia, whether it was in all types of public facilities as well as private accommodations and all types of carriers, whether it was the ferry or commuter airplanes, and as well as public commercial carriers, and trains, just, well, buses, all types of settings, and I never did encounter difficulty, except when occasionally with taxi cabs. There, the taxi cab driver seemed to be more concerned that the dog would shed on against the seat as opposed to any other concern. And this primarily, I've never been refused in Juneau. I'd always said I was in Anchorage. However, in regard to identification to provide, I'm only familiar with the dogs of the CNI Incorporated in out of Morristown, New Jersey. Now, their procedure is that as soon as the dog is weaned at 8 weeks, it's placed into a 4-H home for 12 to 16 months. And, well, it's the 4-H individual is required to go through an obedience class with the dog and to be under the supervision of a responsible adult, generally the 4-H leader. An assessment is done on the dog's learning capacity, and thus to determine if the dog has the capacity to learn and also to assure that the dog is under control. The procedure that the CNI Incorporated uses in reference to private businesses is for the adult to, in advance of the young person or the trained or the teenager, as from the testimony that was provided here today, before they go into a private business, an adult might proceed and speak to the owner and indicate that it would be a good learning opportunity and a good experience for this dog under training to enter, to come into the business and to walk through as a part of its training experience and to obtain a permission in advance. And then the young person who is in charge of the training of the dog is accompanied under the supervision of the adult into the facility, and that is how that kind of experience is handled. And Vaccine I Incorporated does not recommend that a young person, and they're talking about a 4-H member, go into a facility with a young pup without announcing or without it the owner being aware of that, just because of the control issue. my sense in regard to training, and it was my sense that it was, as I read the section, that it disapplied to programs that might undertake the training of a service animal in Alaska, that the training agency, the training school, agency, or other facility the training of a certified animal be its primary function, and not that it not just be a tag on program, because it does require a great deal of work and time after the dog has gone through 12 to 16 weeks in the 4-H home. It returns to Morristown, New Jersey, where it is then undergoes 4 months of training with a trainer who, before they are allowed to work with a string of dogs and to work with students in the preparing of a student and the dog to work together, the trainer goes through, or the candidate trainer goes through, a 3-year apprenticeship program under the supervision of a individual responsible who supervises the training of the trainers and the training of the dogs. So it's a very rigorous program. The dog, at least in regard to seeing eye dogs and guide dogs and their other, I'll speak to that in a moment, the other programs, that the dog is responsible for the space around the blind or vision-impaired person. And it's in terms of responsible for the space when approaching and upstairs or downstairs, curbs, or when crossing the street, when working traffic, when working on a sidewalk. It's not a minor undertaking, and it really should be undertaken only by a, if you will, school, agency, or other facility that has really had a great deal of experience or preparation for this type of undertaking. And any school program or facility that, or school agency or other facility whose primary function, if you will, is the training of a service animal, certainly in regard to guide dogs or seeing eye dogs, should be, I would recommend following the recommendations and guidelines of the United States Council for Dog Guides, or for Guide Dog Schools. This is, there are 9 members of that particular organization. That, and C9 Incorporated is one member. Guide Dogs for the Blind out of San Rafael, California is another member. I assume Lead Dogs out of New York is one. And then Desert Dogs, I'm not sure that of that program it was mentioned, is another member, or was a member. And I don't know where the others are located. But it does give some control over what is expected or required of a program issuing a animal. And in regard to access to a service, to a program, I've taken him into fairs, to zoos, into pet shops without difficulty, and I've never been challenged. and
Doctor, if I could interrupt you, what was the name again of the national board that did certification?
United States Council of Guide Dog Schools.
Thank you.
And they do not certify. They're just programs.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go right ahead.
You bet. No problem. I don't believe I have anything else that I might say. There's probably a lot to... It seems to be a somewhat contentious issue.
I've got a couple questions, and
yes.
Maybe it'll bring out some other thoughts. Doctor, you said you've not had very many adverse experiences yourself. I'm trying to understand where some of the problem is. I'm surprised, and maybe just make a side comment. I'm surprised, and I'm so ignorant of this subject. I appreciate your taking the time to explain it to us. I'm surprised that it takes almost 2 years before a client can be united with a dog.
That in terms of the Wizard was 18 months, and my first dog, Pavia, was, I believe, almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Old before I obtained her, and she was much more lively, much more. She required much more independently minded dog, just by nature.
Yeah.
Whereas Wizard is a very sensitive dog, and very responsive to. He wants to please, and also with practice. The experience I obtained with my first dog, I'm undoubtedly a much better dog user, and it provided the appropriate praise and appropriate level of correction at the appropriate time. That Wizard has been a more effective dog for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was clear that Pavia had spent more time in the 4-H home setting than Wizard did. Perhaps that was because she was slightly less disciplined.
Sure. It just
Senator Taylor?
Yes?
Senator Craig, may I please make one final comment?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. Seeing eye dogs and hearing ear dogs are in some ways the same and yet very different. For instance, my hearing ear dog... One of my labs was so well trained, it took about 3 years, but when he was done with his training, he knew 1,000 commands. When my Irish Setter's training was done, she knew 750 commands. Every one of them was documented for what she could do. It's a lot of work. Some different in some ways, but for instance, with my dogs, they could tell me if somebody was at the door, if the alarm went off, be quiet, if a car was nearby, if somebody was talking to me in a grocery store and I didn't hear, they'd tell me which direction it was and where it was at. They could tell me if I was in immediate danger, they would literally push me out of the way, bring me back. They would let people know around them that there was a certain margin so that I would know. The dogs would know, I mean, I could literally have them placed on my right side or my left side, and they would tell me if somebody was on my left side, my right side, in back of me, in front of me, if it was at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, they would tell me, for instance, if the baby was choking, there would be a different bark. If the phone rang, it was also different. They would bring me to wherever it was at, or they would bark or paw me. They saved my life quite a few times. Seeing eye dogs have some of the same requirements, but what I'm saying is if we do it in such a way that the dogs not only benefit the person that the dog's for, but society, because when you have a properly trained animal, and they're allowed to go any place under any circumstance, I directly benefit, my dog benefits because the training is kept up. And the people in the surrounding area also benefit. That means, like when I go to college, okay, that means when I go to work, that means when I have to go shopping, the whole bit. I just really want to stress the point that I appreciate what you guys are trying to do. And to please keep up the good work, but to also realize that it says in this amended form about the minimum standards, we have to make sure that the standards for a seeing eye dog and a hearing ear dog are different because they're for different needs. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Parnell, doctor.
Doctor, I've been thinking a lot about what Senator Ellis said earlier about whether this should be limited to public facilities or private businesses. And I was just curious, in your 23 years of experience, can you think of some situations where an animal in training, a service animal in training, should not be allowed in a private business? I mean, have you ever encountered I have to tell you, I thought of two potential areas, and maybe you can help me.
Mm-hmm.
There may be a reason for safety for an animal in training. Somebody may have a concern for safety in certain private businesses, for instance, I don't know, daycare centers, and I'm speaking out of ignorance here, but I can see somebody turning down an animal in training because they're concerned over the safety of some individuals.
A machine shop.
Okay, another one. And so I wonder, can you think, are we on the right track, or am I just totally? Are there some places where an animal in training really should not be in terms of a private business?
In terms of an animal in training, where they have not really gone through the formal discipline training by a trainer who has gone through the lengthy apprenticeship program, that a dog in training or pre-training is really just you're giving the dog an opportunity to be exposed to the kind of settings that the dog might be required to might encounter as a result of a blind or vision impaired user living their life as independently as possible. And the one setting where I, during the 60s with my first dog, encountered resistance to having the dog was when I took the dog into a bar room where alcohol was being served and there were people at different levels of intoxication or had imbibed to different levels. And where it wasn't so much a problem with the dog as it was with the behavior of the people around the dog and their response to the dog. It's, for example, it's encouraged not that a dog, that other people not pet a working dog make over a working dog do a great deal because what makes the dog work is the strength of the bond between the user and the dog, and that determines the strength of the praise when you praise the dog. And if it's picking up freebies all along, it weakens the meaning of your praise, which you use to reinforce appropriate behavior. And in a bar, if you tell a person who is had too much to drink, that please don't pet the dog. Mm-hmm. It may not result in difficulty between the dog and the inebriated person, but it might work between the user and the inebriated person. Or I just don't know how a person might respond. That's the only setting I can think of.
Thank you.
I don't know that that's the grounds for denying the use of a dog in in all those places where alcohol is served.
Well, I was fascinated when you were talking about the training that the dogs go through, in that the people that are doing that intensive training before the client arrives, they do it in private places of business and different places, but they either write or call ahead and get permission from that person to come in.
That's with the 4-H. This is how CNI Incorporated suggests or recommends that the 4-H home who has a young person providing the pre-training, which is basically exposing the dog to different types of settings, church, doctor's offices, or schools, perhaps, and other places of shopping, including grocery stores. But yes, that the adult may proskoy obtain its permission first, and then accompany the young person while they take the dog in to that particular facility.
I don't have any other questions. Any member of the committee have any questions? You still have three of us here in attendance, Senators Ellis, Parnell, and myself. We still have a quorum, so we're still prepared to move on the bill.
I do have one more other in terms of identification. CNI Incorporated issues to the individual a card indicating that it is that they are a the CNI Incorporated has placed the dog in the home,
mm-hmm.
and that the individual, so that individual is a card carrier carrying and does have a card authorizing.
The way the bill's drafted, that does pick up that as certification.
Yes. And then they also, the dog has a tag on its collar identifying it as a CNI dog.
Mm-hmm.
And also they have, CNI Incorporated uses a particular type of collar with a kerchief that the dog has around its neck. It sounds like desert dogs use a jacket, and then San Rafael has a blanket on the back. But one of my concerns is that the bill needs to be drafted in such a way, and there need to be such controls, that not just anybody can put a blanket on the back of a dog and say, I are a dog in training.
Sure. Well, that's what I want too, Doctor, and that's what I'm concerned about, is that those people who are certified and are out there doing that good faith job, they've got a kind of good housekeeping seal of approval on them, and there's a uniform identification thing that's used in the state, so anybody that sees this activity going on could very quickly figure out what's happening there and know that there's somebody that's been approved for that purpose. And I think that'll also discourage any scofflaws from trying to take advantage of it for the convenience of their dog or themselves when they're really not entitled to that sort of courtesy.
And it might be determined whether or not guide dogs for the blind and the desert dogs and the others, if they, most of the people here in Alaska are training, pre-training schools from dogs from San Rafael, California, not Morristown, New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
But that that the guide dogs for the blind also requires that the 4-H member or the teenager has participated in a an obedience training class prior to taking the dog out into public.
Yeah, so that would be part of this.
Initial level of control has been established over the dog.
Yes, and that would be, that's part of the bill now with the certification provision in it.
Good, good.
I don't have any further questions. Thank you very much, Doctor. I really appreciate you taking the time to come in and really appreciate your testimony.
I think it's a good work. I think it definitely needs to be done. And I really hope that I'm concerned that just when it does speak of schools, agencies, or other facilities, that we don't just, there's some limit on that there is a certification of those programs also, that a means is found to certify them,
sure.
That not just any program can say we're going to train dogs. There does need to be control over the personnel and the quality of the dog and the lengthy training that is involved.
Yes.
I think I've said everything at least twice.
Well, maybe we heard it then.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you all, your time and your efforts.
You bet, Doctor. We have another person in Anchorage. That's Patrick Reinhart.
Yeah, thank you, Senator. I'm with the State Independent Living Council, and I just wanted to add one additional comment that might help move things along in terms of this bill. And it has to do with the definition of public facility. Perhaps if we added some language to that section that not only means a state-owned or operated facility, but any entity that accepts public funding, in that definition, that would expand the number of places, and if we'd like to see the, you know, the entire private sector included in this. But if that's not going to happen, that might be a kind of a median area to strive for, anyway.
Yeah, I appreciate that, but let me give you my response only, Pat. I think the doctor has very strongly indicated that until such time as the dog has been through a certain level of training and is actually working with the type of certified individual that we've been discussing with lengthy experience and background, that there's probably not a lot of opportunities where the dog should be forced on somebody in the private sector unwillingly. And in fact, that might not be good for either the dog or in its training or the program, that in other areas, the people that have been doing this for years take the time to get permission and have consent up front and know who they're sending into the facility. I think it'd be nice to have 4-H kids taking dogs to the fair. I think that it could also result in some real messes that nobody really wants to see an encounter occur on. And there may be some awfully good reasons out there not to do that. The only example given by the doctor was a bar, and I don't expect to see a bunch of the 4-H kids dropping into a bar for a cold one on the way home, but I do think there is a lot of real-life situations out there that might develop, which we may be better off not forcing at this point. But I'd like you to react to that. I'm just throwing that out as an idea.
Yeah, well, I think you've covered those issues in terms of certification and the changes that you suggested in the bill earlier, which the copy I have here doesn't have that, but I did listen to it. I'm speaking more, you know, to the issue of the definition of public facility, and there are a lot of public facilities or private facilities that may be included in this definition if we include those that accept public money. That obviously isn't going to be your everyday grocery store or gift store down the corner, but it could certainly open up a lot more facilities for training. Again, we'd love it to have all facilities available for this type of thing, and I think you've covered the issue with the certification, and I think the 4-H groups and others that have developed these programs do a tremendous job making sure their people are trained appropriately and know the proper response in dealing with businesses. I think Dr. Hagmeier brought that up as well, that they're, you know, they've been trained to get permission to do this type of thing anyway, and we agree with that. What the whole idea of this bill to begin with in getting it going was when they're running into some brick walls, and all this would do is give them an out to say that, you know, this is opportunity to help some people, and we have the law behind us to be able to do it. I would hope that very few people would even have to even get to that level where they have to pull out this law as a means to get through the door to train an animal, but certainly this would help in some situations.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. Mrs. Athens, I think you had an additional comment or question you wanted to ask now that you've got a copy of the CS.
Yes, I do. I have several comments and some questions. First of all, yes, indeed, just a general part of our protocol is for our 4-H'ers, and we do ask our 4-H'ers to do the calling because we're trying to develop young people as well. And in the case of Ruby Schmidbauer, we have an adult. If the family is a raiser, then probably the adult is going to do a lot of the calling and asking for permission. And so I just wanted to let you know that that is just a normal part of our protocol, that we call in advance. In a case of an emergency, if I were driving to Anchorage and I run into a snowstorm and I have to stay at Summit Lake Lodge, I may not have called in advance, so things do come up. But I do want to let you know there are situations where we do establish the working relationship with the manager, then management changes. So we come in with our dogs, and we're asked to leave because management has changed, and nobody sends us notices that management has changed. When I was raising my dog, I was kicked out of a local fast food restaurant because that had happened. So I called the general manager of the whole Kenai Peninsula, and he said there must have been a misunderstanding. So things like that do happen, and I can tell you we only work with one school. We no longer work with Guide Dogs for the Blind of San Rafael. We work only with Guide Dogs of the Desert. And a problem I have with, I guess I'm trying to understand these changes because now you've added on another level us to work with, but we're not even getting the private sector. So this has turned out even worse than, I mean, it's making me feel like we never would have bothered in the first place. Because now what you're saying is you're putting a fee on people who want to do community service because now you have to process their certification, which I do anyway. And also we're not getting the private sector put back in. I would like more clarification about who would certify and, you know, can I just turn this over to that person and not have to do the guide dog training program anymore?
Well, I don't think there's any intent around here to have the state take over this function. All we're looking for is some method of uniform identification so that people will not be placed in those situations. And, in fact, the department can adopt the very program you currently have ongoing, and you can be the one telling the department whether or not someone has met those specs. That's the way we drafted it.
But why are we charging a fee? These people are already spending up to $1,000 to raise this dog, and now you're giving them a fee to do community service?
No, it's a fee to get the license, and if I don't do it that way, I have to tag a fiscal note onto it and have it paid for by the state to do it for you. I don't want to slow the bill down by a referral up to the Finance Committee.
Our whole point for this bill was to get access. Now you've tacked so much on to this that it doesn't even feel like something I can manage anymore.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Any further comments?
Yes, this is Ruby again. If you would look at some of the pictures that was faxed to you last month, Yukon is wearing a coat. These dogs come from the School of Guide Dogs of the Desert with a large blue coat, and it's on the coat that says Guide Dogs of the Desert. And then Linda gives us 4-H in patches to put on those. And the dog has a tag with his name and his number on it and the school's telephone number. And then we have a card that we carry. We have papers we have filled out. We have a contract with the school in Palm Springs, California, the Guide Dogs for the Desert, that we will raise this dog. They come with a list of items that they have to learn, commands. They have to learn all of these to go in an elevator, to go up and down steps, to lay under the table at a, in a restaurant, to go in a grocery store, do not smell the meat. They come with pages of instructions that we get when we get a dog. And our home is even inspected before we get the dog. Linda has visited with us. The school stays in contact with us. I don't know. The dogs are definitely identified when we take them into businesses. And we are very careful with our dogs. They have restrictions. They cannot ride in the back of a pickup. And we are responsible for our dogs when we take them into a business of any kind. I just don't know. I think maybe some of the businesses or people need some education because they definitely know what these dogs are when we walk to the door. And we do call. I just think Alaska should adopt the bill 170 the way it was written the first time, because there's such a long list waiting for these guide dogs that are trained. There's not near enough dogs trained to fill the demand for the blind people. And most of the blind people are college people, business people, who would like to have a dog. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruby. Are there any further witnesses here? Bryce, it's your bill. It's your call. I need to get Mr. Parnell back here.
Yeah, well, there's not a whole lot of call right now until we do receive quorum.
Mr. Chairman, he's
go ahead.
Senator Ellis.
Responding, I thought we sort of made a breakthrough there when Senator Miller, who I consider, you know, small businessman of the decade, said that the certification, I mean, he applauded your certification language there and said that that relieved his concerns as a private business person about allowing the dogs and the dogs in training into at least his business. So I thought we were making progress there, that you'd add in the certification language and that would relieve some concerns of the private sector. And then there were at least two suggestions about some sort of middle ground there if we didn't want to go all the way to individual businesses, but other sorts of what many people would consider public places but are actually private places. The state fairgrounds or a mall or something where this kind of training ought to be able to take place. So I can empathize with the folks on the line who are saying, please don't give us some new form of certification that they, and it's just lack of information and detail, I think, on their part that raises some trepidation with them if we don't get the, I sense that they thought the, or were willing to go along with the new certification system that you're suggesting if they got more access to the places they need to train these dogs. And that sounded, and with Senator Miller's comments, that sounded like we maybe had some common ground there. But I don't know. Representative Bryce's opinion is pretty important in all this. So.
Frankly, that's what I was hearing. Also, I believe in your packet you should have a letter from the Alaska State Fair. My staff brought that to my attention during the testimony, which deals substantially with the visual identification issue and the need to have the consistent manner in which a dog is visually identified that certification addresses. Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that what we're talking about within the certification process, that frankly the department has the latitude to go to 4-H and say, you're a certified program, you do it the way you want to do it. You use the identification necessary that you feel is appropriate, as long as it is easily identifiable. The concerns that have been raised, while I definitely respect them, I think that those concerns can be addressed by the department. I mean, I can see a potentiality, in all honesty, that a regulation can be written that won't cost a penny. In all honesty, one page saying this program is considered certified, 4-H, whatever, where the cost to the department are not necessarily something that's going to cost $20 a person, for that matter, $10 a person, possibly $1 a person. So the certification process that you do have here, I think, goes a long ways towards helping establish that level of comfort that most people have expressed concern in terms of, you know, public accommodation and private areas. So, you know, I would like to see the bill moved. I think that I would leave it into your hands as to whether or not to expand it into the world of the private nonprofits, private corporations, whatever. That's the call that you guys need to make. I don't want to go in and try to undermine what was done in Hess by any means. But I do appreciate what you're talking about here with the certification.
Back to the committee, Senator Parnell.
I'm going to vote to move the bill as it is, but I can also tell you, and I've talked to Senator Ellis, I'm open to changing the bill. I just think that to expand access, it's just that I think the testimony from the doctor who's had 23 years of experience here says that when a dog is in training, they're not necessarily trustworthy in all these circumstances. And my suggestion is we go ahead and move the bill if that's the will here of the sponsor and the committee, and you consider an amendment. I mean, I wouldn't mind an amendment myself where a certified service animal has, you know, can have access to private facilities.
They do.
Okay.
But that's an ADA requirement.
Okay. Well, then I can't address my training concern then.
Okay.
That's not able to be addressed. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll move Senate CS for CS for House Bill number 170, Judiciary, denominated as work draft R from the committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you for that motion, and I'll object just for purposes of comment also. I was moved by the doctor's testimony because I think there probably are instances where you probably, it may not be good for the dog or the trainer to get into certain situations. Now, I don't think we can predict what those situations are going to be,
yeah.
And that's the part I have problems with, is that to open up the definition to what it originally was, and I know what the people want, means that nobody has to make the courtesy phone call to get permission from the guy to walk into his store. And when I have a young person walk into a store with this dog, it may have great identification on it and everything else, and that owner is caught blindsided, they're not going to be a happy person to deal with. Whereas if they're called up front and somebody takes the time to ask permission and says, can we do this and we'll be coming through, that owner's, I make you bet, 99 times out of 100, they get an affirmative response saying, sure, how can I help you? And if you could come at such and such a time, it might be better for my business than at other times. And the trainer's going to say, well, yeah, but maybe we need a busier time too. And the owner says, well, come by the first couple times in the late afternoon when I don't have too many people. And if everything works out okay, then come back during a busy time. And I think it makes the owner of that business or manager part of the process. And they then become part of the training and wanting to see to it that they're helping. I can just see some young person walking into a McDonald's with a dog, and there's a new guy on at McDonald's, and he goes through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you end up with a bad taste in everybody's mouth because somebody didn't make a phone call. With this law change, nobody'd have to make any phone call, and there's no longer an incentive to do so. And I don't want to put people in that position either. I think these programs, because of the protocols they've set up, those phone calls are being made because people know how important it is to have that private sector working with you. And I would like to help on that, but at this point, I feel like everybody else is. Until we can come up with a definition that will provide some coverage, it's difficult to do that.
And one point that needs to be made clear, Mr. Chair, and you definitely touched on it, is that this bill is not prohibitive. This will not prohibit the training. It will require those trainers to, or those people doing that training.
And it specifically opens up facilities that were left up to the discretion of managers and others that are state-controlled facilities prior to that. So at least it's one stuck, like Mr. Ellis says, it may be only half a, not half a loaf, but only the crust, but at least it's a piece of crust.
Said it was the heel of the loaf.
There
yeah.
We go.
Well, let's not degrade heels. I like the heel of the bread.
Well, there is a motion pending. Is further comment? Any objection to the motion? Bill moves to the committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Price, I really want to thank you for the work you've done on this, because I think it is a difficult process, but one
it
that
is.
I certainly applaud, and I appreciate you bringing it before the committee.
And I appreciate the work you've done and the committee has done. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
House Bill 7, they had two provisions right in it, and then they caught a glitch, and they just told us that they want to redraft on it. I don't know how. I've seen four drafts in the last week. How we can keep going in this circle, I don't know.
You want me to explain it, Mr. Chairman?
No, we'll bring it up at the next hearing. I'm having a hard time holding the quorum, and I want to.
Are there many people on teleconference for that bill, the mediation?
I did have. Let me see my list here.
Make an
announcement. Hit it on you, didn't I? Let me announce it. House Bill 7 for Don, Linda, and Sharon. House Bill 7 will come up at the next hearing.
We had a problem with the draft.
The drafters just didn't get the material up here to us in time to get to it.
And we do have another bill that day, but only one, and it's an LBNA report, so we should be able to get to this legislation.
Right. Okay, thank you. We're adjourned.